Welcome to Small Bites Radio with Donato Marino and Derek Tim. We hope you're hungry.
Raw spaghetti you can eat with a spoon. Oh, SpaghettiOs.
Hit it.
Where's the beef?
Cookie.
Nothing for you! Nothing for you! Nothing for you!
Feed me more!
As long as I can have you here with me, I'd much rather be forever in blue jeans, babe.
Welcome everybody to... Where are we at today? Wildfire Radio, Small Bites with Donato Marino, DNL, Bean a Barista Service, co-owner of Terry's 2, 1541 Chester Pike, Falkroft, PA. And start off our show, we have Courier Post nightlife correspondent, New York Times recognized for blog eating in New Jersey, John Howard Fusco.
Evening, guys. How are we all doing this evening?
Great, John. How are you?
Good, good. I want to talk about Cicala. This is the new Southern Italian restaurant at the Divine Lorraine Hotel on North Broad Street. Eater Philly is reporting that the opening date for Chef Joe Cicala's new place is Friday, November 15th. The restaurant will be open for dinner Monday through Saturday and will offer a Sunday brunch. Philly Mag reports that much of the decor of the restaurant are heirlooms from the Cicala family. So that's opening on this Friday, the 15th. The big news this past week in Philly food was word that the Termini family would no longer be part of Giuseppe and Sons. According to Philly Mag, the split actually took place back in late September. So if you're looking for Termini cannolis and other desserts in Giuseppe and Sons, they will be no longer available there. So that was big news this past week. Say hello to Eva. This is an all-day cafe and pizza place that's coming to Kensington. This is a concept from Reanimator Coffee that includes sourdough breads and pastries as well as wood-fired pizzas. According to Philly Mag, the location won't be open until late this year or early 2010. But for now, you can try the breads and pastries on Saturdays at the pop-up version of the restaurant in front of the future home. A couple of closings to mention from the past week. Maison 208 on South 13th Street. And Dimitri's has closed both of its locations in Queens Village and Northern Liberties. On the Jersey side, our friend Matt at NJ Penn reported this week that a new coffee shop called Cupa Espresso Bar opened in Westmont. Not just coffee, but Greek pastries are on the menu. So all these articles and more from the past week in Philly food will be posted later tonight on my blog and shared at Twitter at Eating in South Jersey. As always, hashtag Small Bites Radio.
Thank you, John.
All right, guys. Have a good evening.
All right, John. You too. Thank you very much. And not to leave Derek Tim out, which I didn't mention in the very beginning. He's traveling the world and enjoying life, and we're here in the cold Philadelphia. You can reach Derek at bluejeanfood.com. And to continue the show, we have some lamb chops that were brought in by Cafe Ida and a nice antipasta salad. Lamb chops are tender. The whole room smells incredible. So, Ida, what's your secret to the lamb chops?
Hello, everybody. My name is Lenita. We own a coffee shop on 1732-34 West Passyunk, Philadelphia. If I tell you the secret, everybody will make it home. So I can't tell you the secret out.
So, Ida, what drove you to open a cafe in South Philadelphia?
So I came from Albania. I was a teacher there, and it was my dream to come to this country. I won a lottery in 2005, and I work in a coffee shop for over 12 years. And my ex-boss, he got old and he retired. So after I learned everything there, I decided to open my own coffee shop.
So you didn't need him anymore. That's why he retired?
No, he gave up on everybody.
I understand he moved back to Italy.
Yes, he did. Yeah. I think he have a good life over there.
I'm sure he will. Tony was a good guy.
Yeah, he was good heart.
Yeah. So what's the future of Cafe Ida? I've seen you made many improvements, outside seating, awnings. I mean, means that you're going to stay there for a long time.
We're having breakfast, lunch, and dinner all day long. We have a very good coffee. I think is Donato's coffee is one of the best coffee around.
Thank you very much. I appreciate that. D&L coffee.
And I think my food is very good. My customer, everybody come in, and they keep coming back. So they tell me that I think I'm doing good. I'm doing $1 more every day. So
that's good. You're able to keep the doors open. Of all the food that you cook, what is the most popular that you're
putting out? We do everything. Everything from scratch. The soups in winter are very popular. We do lamb chops. We do stews. So
I mean, I had your lamb stew. It's hearty, fills your stomach, and you definitely don't need anything more after you eat a nice meal like that.
We do a tripe in winter. I know everybody like tripe. But
yeah, tripe's
the
like
customer who
one
like
of
it.
Those dishes that either you hate it or like it.
Yes. So this is what we do.
Is there any plans on expanding the Cafe Ida name?
Yes. I love to open a restaurant in the future. So it's my second dream.
You have any idea where or there, no thought has been brought into it yet?
I'm not sure yet. I'm hoping the Poconos.
The Pocono area. Nice.
Yes.
Kind of far away from your roots.
That's okay.
Well, I think if you do the same type of food that you're doing down here today that you brought into the studio, as well as the reputation you're gaining in this South Philly area, I think you should do very successful.
Thank you. Yeah. I try the best.
Yeah, the best definitely shines through.
I work too hard for it. So if you work hard, you'll get there.
Yeah, the American dream.
Yep.
So you have two kids?
Yes, I have two kids. My son Arbor is 12, and my daughter Fiona is 5.
And they help around in the restaurant?
My son does. My daughter, too.
Yeah, I've seen her running
around.
She likes
to talk to all my customers, and she thinks they're all in France. She sits on tables, and sometimes we have a new customer, and I feel like, Fiona, don't go there. She said, all my friends, I know them. So,
yeah, that's good.
No, that's great.
Also, my husband does a great job.
Who's that?
It's my better half.
No, I know you do make a great team together.
Yes. I mean, we together went there, so.
Yeah. I mean, every time I come in, he's either behind the counter doing something, cleaning tables, bussing, whatever it takes to keep the customers happy. And you could tell by the repeat business that you are receiving, because when I come in there, every so often, it's the same customer sitting down, eating a cup of coffee in the morning, croissants. You have a very extended menu to please anybody's palate.
So we do.
Yeah. I know everything you make is from scratch. I mean, you have the kitchen in the basement. Running up and down those steps after a while must...
I'm losing some weight.
Well, you know, it was, you know, an Italian place, so the kitchen is in the basement. Just like half the houses in South Philly.
That's true. We had one in... we made the tomatoes in September. When we were ready, I had to carry all those baskets of tomatoes down to the basement. Oh. And we had to can them and bring them back up. But I loved my mom and did everything that she wanted me to do.
Exactly. The way it should be.
Yes, it should. To move on, we have a doctor in the house.
Dr. Smoothie.
Bill Schmidt of Dr. Smoothie.
Good to be here. Thank you, Donato, for the invite. Again, my name is Bill Schmidt. With a company called Dr. Smoothie, we specialize in clean beverage, frozen beverage products. We're nationwide, worldwide, ship all over the place. We produce out of Orange County, California. We're primarily a wholesale supplier of all natural puree products that we crush, cook up in the plants, and pack it into a bottle. All natural, no sugar add, no preservatives, no GMO. It's totally vegan. It's a ready-to-use product, and you know, that seems to be working now for us, and all natural. Plus, we have organics and other lines of products. But really, the way we got started in this business is, you know, 30 years ago, the founder wanted to create something that was a no-sugar, healthy product, no sugar added. The product has the all-natural sugar ingredients already in it. But, yeah, it's doing very well for us. We're growing at double digits, and that says a lot. It says that there's a high demand for the product, for this type of product. Our typical customer base that we target is a coffee shop, cafe, anyone offering a beverage. You make this from scratch through a blender, puree, fruit puree, water, and ice. It's very simple, straightforward. If you just want to have a simple drink, you can definitely jazz it up and add a lot more to it. You can make it into an alcohol beverage, non-alcoholic beverage. So it's great. It's a great product for young kids. If mom, dad doesn't want them to have a lot of sugar, something more all natural, it's a great product for the youth as well as all ages.
Yeah, I think you see it in today's market that the trend for a healthier alternative to all those high sugar drinks, mm-hmm. and high fat and chemicals to preserve everything just can't be good for us in the long term. I think that's why the cancer rate is so much higher. I think that's where Dr. Smoothie comes in with that alternative to make sure that we live longer. That way they can make more money.
You know, I would probably say 10 years ago, organic seemed to, probably 10, 15 years ago, organic hit the scene pretty hot and heavy. Then it kind of simmered down. But organic is doing well, but it's still not the target item. It's a clean beverage. We have an organic line, and we have a all-natural, we call it 100% crushed line. So the non-organic, all-natural, is 80% of our business. That's the sweet spot of our business that customers really seem to gravitate to. Plus, we had 21 flavors, 21 varieties, so you never get bored, you know. But there are, like, top three that sell more than anything else, your strawberry, banana, strawberry, mango. Then everything else from there is just a mix. You know, I cover the East Coast, so, you know, it's different, a lot different here than it is in Florida. So the markets change up and down the coast. It is weather-driven, temperature-driven. Right now, it's starting to slow down, you know, with the frozen beverages. But there's still a year-round demand for a smoothie because not only is it a healthy alternative, but you're seeing people having a smoothie in the morning for breakfast, making a breakfast smoothie out of this product. And that's a big deal. You know, because you can add a lot more to the smoothies than just puree, water, and ice. I mean, you can
add the extra bananas, the whey
protein.
Yeah, the proteins to make it more.
Yeah.
Before you go to the gym,
right? You know, you can add fresh spinach and kale on top of whatever flavor that you prefer to use, because you know the bottom line is if it's not good, people aren't going to consume it. So you have to have the flavor, but also the healthy components to go with it.
Yeah, because people don't want to have those big, heavy breakfasts anymore. Yeah. They're falling mm-hmm. asleep on the trains on the way mm-hmm. in. It's just so much taxing on their bodies to consume that. That's why I think more people are hearing about the European diet, where you have a cup of coffee and a croissant, or a cup of coffee and a light dessert, light fruit or light something, so your stomach isn't trying to digest first thing in the morning when you wake up. I think mm-hmm. you know you need that little a little extra so your stomach has a chance to get ready for lunch later on.
Yeah, to kick off the metabolism.
Yeah. Right. I think it, more people are don't want to. They're tired of getting sick. Tired of being. I mean, they don't want to take all this medicine anymore.
Yeah, I mean, there's. I mean, you know, it's a lifestyle change too. So it's not just having a smoothie once in a while. I mean, I do so many different venues, and I'm involved with so many different customers, and where I sell this product through. But you know, during the spring summertime, I'll do huge soccer events down in Hamilton, New Jersey. And the customer base is anywhere from 8 years old to 19. And it's amazing. I learned a lot by doing those events on the weekends. And amazing how many kids and parents want that whey protein, those add-ins, the spinach and kale on top of just, you know, with the fruit smoothie. So that mentality of the athlete is a little different than your everyday health, the person that's looking for a healthy option, alternative, such as the breakfast smoothie. I mean, we do a lot of, we use our products with a lot of NFL teams. I just set up the Baltimore Ravens a month ago.
Oh?
Baltimore Ravens.
Oh?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, the Eagles turned me down, so I just went to the Baltimore Ravens. And we do Jacksonville Jaguars. We do a lot of with the Pittsburgh Steelers through Get-Go convenience stores out there. So you know, we do that, and I do a lot of university football program where we do. It's called a replenishment program. They'll use smoothies to help them replenish coming off the practice fields or working out, whatever it may be. So our products are used in just so many different areas. It's hard to pin down what is our target. Our target is, you know, if you're a food establishment and you have an outlet and you can plug a blender in, you know, you can sell smoothies. I mean, you can.
Yeah, we use a lot of his products at the hotel, all year round. Different restaurants, the bars, the outside pool
at the
area.
At the Ocean Resort.
Yeah.
Casino.
Yep.
Yeah, and they're just getting started. What is this, the second year you've had the product, I think?
Yeah, yep.
First year didn't kind of count, right? So
yeah, well, last year, I mean, yeah. we opened a place in 3 months. We opened, Hard Rock opened the same day. So it was, we were literally, you know, opening under fire.
Yeah, a lot on your plate.
Yeah, you had to get open. You had no choice.
Yeah, well. Through the Ocean Resort with Mike, we do pina coladas, we do the margaritas. Now that's through our other brands called Tropics. That's not a Dr. Smoothie item, but our products like our pineapple Dr. Smoothie, you add a little bit of coconut milk to it, and you have a pina colada. So there's a lot of crossover. The fun part of what I do is going in with an operator that either has a smoothie program, looking to upgrade or just build one from scratch. I love doing that. I have a mind for beverage menus, and our products can literally make 1,000 different drinks with the 5 or 6 product lines that we have.
So you're definitely going to enhance your product, your bottom line by introducing
their bottom line.
Bottom line by introducing the Dr. Smoothie menu to whatever they're serving, especially a coffee house / cafe.
Yeah, I think Mike will tell you the profit margins are probably probably the strongest on the beverage side of the business, right?
Oh yeah, big time
for you guys.
Yep.
And it's quick and easy. 30, 40, 50 seconds to make a drink. And, you know, in his casinos, he's probably selling them for 10, 15 bucks a piece, right?
At least.
that's without the alcohol.
But at the cafe, you're talking, you know, $5. That's the going rate for that type of market. You know, so you have to know the market that you're in. When I do the soccer tournaments on the weekends, we're talking about $8. But in the Hamilton Turf Farm, it's in the middle of nowhere. There's not a Wawa close. You know, they're not leaving.
Yeah, all right, it'll work.
We got them hostage.
Yeah, so they can't go anywhere. Other product line does Dr. Smoothie have besides a smoothie?
We have many, but I'd like to talk about the refreshers because. We're doing an agua fresca, I call it an agua fresca program. And what that is it's all natural flavored water, a little bit of caffeine, but we call it a refresher. We have it marketed as a refresher. And we basically jumped on the bandwagon of what Starbucks has accomplished so well. For the last 4 or 5 years, they've had this program. They make the product behind the counter. So we came out with the product 9, 10 months ago, and we're doing right around a million in sales with it. And that's heavy. Those are heavy numbers for bringing something brand new out, and we don't have any elaborate marketing. I'm it for the East Coast. I'm the person marketing the product to my distributors, educating them how to resell to their end users, or I go right to the end user, depending on the circumstances. Hopefully this time next year, Mike will have it in his casino. But the refresher, like I said, it's an all-natural flavored water with caffeine. It's very refreshing. We have 4 different flavors. We have watermelon, cucumber, mint. Wild berry, strawberry acai. Starbucks has that same flavor. Side by side, they're both on point. They're both very good products side by side. And the blood orange, coconut, ginger. My favorite, but not in our numbers. We sell the product that we sell the most of is the watermelon, cucumber, mint. Just barely outpaces the strawberry acai. And that's because watermelon, if anywhere you look, watermelon is on a beverage menu. Go to any of these national restaurants, there's some type of flavored watermelon. Now you have watermelon vodka, right? Watermelon this, watermelon and that. So
watermelon sorbet.
Yeah, there you go. It's selling off the shelves. And for 2020, we're looking to come out with we're looking to double down on this refresher program. Let me back up. It's an over ice. You don't blend this product. So it's a 1-to-1. You got the refresher concentrate, the one part of that, the one part of water. But you can change up the water and add whatever you want to it. It makes a great mojito. So it definitely crosses over into the bar world. So it's very easy.
Unless you just need a mix, a shaker, pour 1-to-1 and over ice and you're ready to go.
Or you can batch it up in a big batch if you have that type of demand. Yeah.
Yeah, I had the watermelon, mint, cucumber.
Cucumber mint. You can't taste the cucumber.
No, but the mint definitely comes through. Yep. And the watermelon is a hint of watermelon. It's not overpowering at all.
You can imagine that making a great mojito. Yeah.
Yeah, it's...
Yeah.
Wow.
But, so we're looking to double down and come out with a mango passion fruit and a dragon fruit. Dragon fruit, Starbucks does that as well. They do a mango dragon fruit, which is delicious. And I mention Starbucks a lot because they've already established the trends and the marketing on this product. And that has a lot to do with how well we're doing with the products because the customers we're going into pay attention to what Starbucks is doing, and they already know the program. I've seen it firsthand with the millennials coming into some of these other non-Starbucks establishments, seeing refreshers on the menu and say, wow, they have refreshers here just like Starbucks. That's music to your ears because that's exactly what we want to happen.
Yeah, and they set the bar on.
Yeah. You know how it is in the coffee world.
Yeah.
You know, Dunkin' came out with, iced coffee back in the day. We all jumped on the iced coffee wagon.
Yeah.
You know, because the marketing was on every billboard we were driving by.
Yeah, but before you would never hear iced coffee.
Yeah, exactly.
You drink your coffee cold.
Yeah.
What is wrong with you? But now, that's summer, winter, iced coffee sells tremendously.
Yeah. Cold brew is here.
Yeah.
We take we'll take a lot of these products like the cold brew and we'll marry it together instead of water. We'll add that to like a strawberry acai. It has a really nice finished product, believe it or not. Doesn't sound appealing, but it actually has a good finish. Yeah.
All right, Bill. Thank you very much for the Dr.
Thank
Smoothie.
You.
How's a good way for somebody to get in touch with you? On social media.
Dr. Smoothie.com. is I mean, that's our website. Anything that goes through our website comes right to me. You know, if anybody out there is listening and has a cafe and is doing a frozen beverage program, give out my cell phone number. Yeah. 347.
Go ahead. Yeah.
347-684-2745. That's my business cell.
Yeah. Okay. All right. And for all of us that were to school, we always remember that special lunch lady. Well, we have one. Jennifer, I'm probably not going to say your last name correctly. Gattis? Is that correct, Jennifer? Uh-oh. Jennifer, she must be preparing some lunches for us.
That would be nice.
All right, well, while we're trying to get her back online, we'll talk more about the antipasta. Nita, what do you have in your antipasta that you brought in for us today?
We had the prosciutto, mortadella. We got a couple of different kinds of cheese. We got the mozzarella. We got olives, some long hot. Usually this is what we get for the antipasta.
Well, nice. You have that every day?
Yes, we have that every day.
Okay, great. So, Jennifer, are you back?
I'm here.
Hey, Jennifer, how are you?
I'm doing great. How are you?
I'm doing great. So we're here to talk about your new book, The Labor of Lunch.
Yes.
So I guess with all the information on the lunch programs that are going around and all the bad publicity, I guess you want to call it, you decided to write about it and see if you could possibly change the way people perceive the lunch program.
Well, I think I initially got really inspired because I had heard about farm-to-school programs, so this idea of sourcing food from local farmers to serve in school lunch programs. And I think I got really excited about that because the National School Lunch Program is something that we already spend a lot of money on, so about $14 billion of federal money every year. So I started to get really excited about this idea of what if we were to actually use that money to support more of our local food systems and in the process provide better quality food for kids.
So the reform that you want to do is do more of a farm to school or farm to lunch program, just like the local restaurants do?
I think that's part of it. But as I actually started doing research for the book, one of the things that I realized as I was spending time in a lot of schools around the country is that a lot of kitchens don't actually have the equipment or the labor to be cooking from scratch, which is something that you have to be able to do if you're like using local food versus just reheating like processed food that's come, you know, from faraway factories. So I think that as I got more into the research process, one of the things that I really started to be a strong advocate for was this idea of actually cooking in schools, because it's a way to get healthier food to kids. But also, as I kind of learned through the process, it's also a way to provide higher quality jobs for kitchen and cafeteria workers, because a lot of them now with reliance on like so many pre-made foods are in like 3 or 4 hour positions. Some, you know, might have 5 or 6 hour positions, especially if their school has a breakfast program, but they don't really have full-time work. So I think that one way to provide better jobs for people, particularly in kitchens and cafeterias, is to go this way of cooking from scratch.
Okay. Well, I guess with the lunch program buying pre-made lunches, they never really had to build up a cafeteria to be able to do that food from scratch.
You know, it's interesting because there were some schools, this program has been around since the 1940s, and there were some schools that really invested in having kitchens and cafeteria spaces where they could cook from scratch and could serve like meals, you know, on, you know, ceramic dishes and things of that nature, not just, you know, plastic kind of throwaway like food culture. But then there were other schools, particularly in some of the nation's like urban areas, where those schools weren't actually built with kitchens to begin with. So they really didn't have the space or infrastructure for doing that kind of work. So it's a little mixed in terms of like individual schools' history, but I think that it's not a reason to not move in that direction now.
Oh, I agree with you 100%. Me being living a block and a half from the school I went to, we walked home every day and got a lunch from my parents, my mom especially. So I never really had to worry about the school lunches like a majority of the kids have to do today.
Big gabagool sandwich, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. And that was actually one of the big reasons why, when there used to be more neighborhood schools and when like it used to be more common for kids to be able to walk home and maybe expect that there could be a parent or other caretaker there. That was one of the reasons why some public schools, particularly in cities, they didn't actually invest in building kitchens and cafeterias. But I think now, the situation's not really the same. So I think it's really important for like all kids to have access to healthy meals. And I think that now, one of the big issues in school lunch is this issue of lunch shaming and lunch debt. And I think that those are two real indicators that parents need help with making sure that kids are getting access to good food during the lunch day or lunch at school.
Parents aren't aware of the programs where they could. I mean, it's a shame to have to put a child through that, have to sit there and watch other people eat and they can't eat nothing. I mean, I don't know.
Yeah,
it's re-educating
there's a couple things. Well, so it's kind of hard because sometimes what ends up happening is, the paperwork for getting free or reduced price lunches sometimes can be complicated for people, or if people maybe are concerned about citizenship status for themselves or someone in their household might feel like nervous about having to provide like a social security number or something like that to get access to free or reduced price lunches for their kids. But we actually find the research shows that some of the people who are most impacted by this issue of lunch debt, so kind of having these unpaid meal charges and then subsequently lunch shaming, are actually the people who are kind of just above the threshold for qualifying for free or reduced price lunches. So that's people who are just slightly over 185% of the federal poverty line. So it might not be that they don't know about the program. It might be that they don't qualify. And kind of from one day to the next, they might be able to afford the price of paying $2 to $3 for their kids' school lunch. And on other days, it might be a real strain for them.
Yeah, that I could understand. So what would you suggest to if the people were listening in Congress today to us, what would you suggest to them for the kids, the way the lunches need to be supplied? Do we need to get big business involved, or are they already involved too much?
Well, it depends, I guess, what portions of big business we're talking about. I think that there's definitely some big food companies that have really profited quite a bit from selling food that's not particularly nutritious and food that has a lot of environmental and kind of social justice issues going on with it to the schools. And there's some companies that I think are really partnering with schools to try to invest in a different kind of school lunch program. But I think that there's actually some exciting proposals now happening at the national level. I think that this increased attention to lunch shaming in particular has really sort of created a conversation about what it would look like to have a universally free school lunch program where all kids would eat and we wouldn't sort of separate them based on their family's economic status. So actually Bernie Sanders and Ilhan Omar from Minnesota recently introduced a bill that I think is pretty interesting that would not only provide free lunches to all kids, but would also provide all schools that source at least 30% of their food from local sources an extra 30 cents to spend on the price of each lunch. So that's kind of a direct public investment in actually improving the quality of the food and supporting local farmers. So I think that direction of not just responding to something like lunch shaming. So this issue of hearing about, like, you know, a kid being served a cheese sandwich or, like, being told they can't go to prom or whatever it might be that a local school district has decided to implement as their policy for trying to, like, recoup that unpaid meal charge. I think that instead of, like, seeing some of these proposals that are happening at the state level and at the federal level to just say, oh, well, we can't have lunch shaming. Like, we have to ban this practice, but then not actually providing, like, school districts, like, any resources to really help with the economic need. I think that that's really not the best direction for us to go in. And
in one of the social medias that they said that if prisoners could have free lunch and free dinner, why can't the kids? So if they have enough money for the prisoners, they should definitely have enough money for the kids, so they don't turn out to be the prisoners that they are, you know, that are in there today.
I mean, I think that that's a really good point. I think, in particular, you know, that experience of feeling shame, and I think for some kids it's like because of these practices, and for other kids it's like there's a culture in some schools, particularly if not a lot of kids are actually eating the school lunch, that, you know, it might be like only the poor kids are eating school lunch and the kids who can afford to pack lunch from home are doing that. So I think that as long as we have a program that only some kids and some families really feel is good enough for them, it's always going to be a space that's sort of damaging in some ways to other kids. So I think it's really important to be focusing on cafeterias as places that are, like, really positive and that make all kids feel included and welcome, because it's a really important, or at least it could and should be, an important break in their day where they get to kind of socialize and feel like a sense of acceptance and, like, relaxation before they have to kind of go back and try to learn for another few hours. But I think, unfortunately, in a fair number of schools across the country today, that's really not how kids experience lunch.
Yeah, I agree 100%. All right, Jennifer, do you want to give out some social media or some way of getting your book and where to get your book from?
Sure, yeah. If people are interested, the University of California Press website, which is the press that published the book, they actually have a coupon on the website. So if you type in, like, the Labor of Lunch and University of California Press, they have a coupon for 30% off. It's also available through a number of different online retailers like Amazon and places like that. But I try to encourage people to support either the press or more independent bookstores. And then I'm also on Twitter at Jennifer E. Gaddis, and I have a website, JenniferLaneGaddis.com. And on the website, I also have some materials that are intended for the people who are reading the book who kind of want to go a little bit deeper and get some instructions for how to think about organizing in their own communities for change.
All right. Thank you very much, Jennifer. Thank you for the call in.
Thanks for having me.
Okay. Yeah, yeah. The school lunch program is definitely a subject that needs to be taken care of. Started with maybe building cafeterias in the school. Maybe that's the problem. They never put them in the beginning, to begin with. But let's change the subject. We're going to talk about Salvation Army. And to do that with us is Chef Michael D'Angelo of Ocean Casino and Resort and an ambassador for the Salvation Army and Chefs on a Mission.
Yes, sir.
So how's it going, Mike?
Fantastic. Big, beautiful day for the American Culinary Federation South Jersey chapter. We managed to feed all the veterans at the Vineland Veterans Home this morning. We did a brunch for them for, it's been done the last 11 years, to give them a special treat. And I have to say, just speaking about cafeterias, having recently been at the ACIT cafeteria, I really don't know what the lady on the phone was talking about, because there's tons of schools in South Jersey that are cooking food. There's a whole school lunch program with what they can and can't use. And so I don't know what they do in California, but it's not what they do in New Jersey. So hopefully we don't fall into those footsteps of not having food for kids. But our program is all about feeding those people that are in need.
Yeah, the hungry.
Yep, and it never ends.
Now, the Chef on a Mission, is that separate from the Salvation Army? Or is that a chapter broken off?
Yeah, it's completely different. Chefs on a Mission started at the Atlantic City Rescue Mission. Chef Bobby Hare is a big advocate on feeding those in need heart-healthy, low-fat meals. So he started many years ago cooking special meals. Myself included, helped him do soups. We got up to 75,000 bowls of soup at the Atlantic City Rescue Mission on a weekly basis. Wrote a cookbook, and then this past October, we started the program up again. So chefs are there every week making a 45-gallon batch of soup for the mission. So the other pieces of Chefs on a Mission are Chef George Fisher at Spectre Food Service at Atlantic City Convention Center, who I work with part-time, was cooking the food for Thanksgiving for the rescue mission. And I was at the Salvation Army cooking all the food for Thanksgiving for the Salvation Army people. Same town, different mouths to feed. And we were basically taking all the Chefs Association members and bussing them back and forth between the two kitchens to cook everything. So then we decided, you know, because me and George went to culinary school together back in the early 80s. We've known each other for 35 or so years, going back to 1982. So all the chefs get together and we do it together with, of course, the help of the CRDA, the Atlantic City Convention Center, Spectre Food Service. So we get all the chefs together. We get food donated by many different companies, produce, turkeys, hams, fish. We've cooked it all for the homeless. We've cooked it all. So we get together for 3 days before Thanksgiving, and we basically made about 2,200 meals last year, and we gave them to Salvation Army Rescue Mission, the Covenant House, Ronald McDonald House, a couple senior centers, some churches. And it's all very, very good to help with everyone. I got involved with the Salvation Army because my wife and all of her volunteer work that she's done over the years. That's originally how I met her back in 2008 when I was the executive pastry chef at Bally's. Along came Kim and her requests for, let's raise money, so why don't you make, you know, breast cancer cookies, and why don't we make king cakes for Mardi Gras and sell them and give money to the United Way. And from there, I'm like full-blooded out to dinner, and I get a phone call, Chef, I don't have food to feed my family. Can you help us? And check, we got to go.
Yeah.
And off to the food pantry we go and drive 45 minutes to drop a family off food so that they can feed their children.
That's an awesome organization you belong to. The kitchen in the convention center must be humongous to be able to do that many meals and the time frame that
you need. Have some great equipment. We have two Rationale ovens. The Rationale ovens, you can cook anything in it. Like, my forte is obviously pastry. I can make any pastry I want in those two ovens. I can switch a setting, and I can roast vegetables in there in 10 minutes like you can't believe. You can grill vegetables in it. Make one more change, and you can roast turkeys. Take the turkeys out, slide another rack in, and I can bake cheesecakes next, just like that. And it's everything comes out perfect. So with that, you can really move a lot of product. We cook about 250 turkeys for Thanksgiving. I fill the oven up with 40 turkeys at like 30 pounds each, and they're done in an hour and a half. Perfect.
Wow, that's quick.
It's incredible. It's great.
Better than deep frying.
Oh, by a long shot. By a long shot.
Yeah. So the two holidays that you do the cooking for, it's Thanksgiving and
Christmas.
And Christmas.
Yeah, but Salvation Army in Atlantic City, we feed basically 6 days a week. So Monday, through Saturday. And then if you go to church on Sunday, you can get a meal too. All right. So we're feeding every day of the week. And thank God with our partners at the Community Food Bank, we get all the food that we truly need. So, and our biggest fundraiser is right now is the Red Kettle campaign. So we're out there ringing the bells, trying to get the money. And every Salvation Army unit runs the same way. We raise money in Atlantic City, and that's the money we use. We get money from the New Jersey chapter or the district, but that's, you know, very few dollars. We have to raise our own money. So every unit, Camden, Cumberland County, they're out there fundraising for themselves to really make it happen. We were very fortunate this year that Dr. J had his golf tournament at the Atlantic City Country Club. So we were able to get funds from Dr. J because he was a Salvation Army kid. He was raised in New York, and he went to the Salvation Army to play basketball. And it was such a thrill to be invited to his kickoff event for his golf tournament because he did a 10-minute segment on the Salvation Army and the things that they did for him, and he gives back every day, which is fantastic.
Which is awesome, yeah. That an athlete recognizes his beginnings, that doesn't forget where he came from, that helps support the people that supported him when he was growing up.
Exactly.
Now, if somebody wants to get one of those red kettles in their establishment, who do they contact?
They can contact me, Chef Michael D'Angelo at gmail.com. And we have to watch where we send them to because different chapter areas have to be, you know, they want the funds for themselves.
Obviously.
So, you know, we can do so much with so many, but so we do a tabletop kettle, as you're aware.
Yeah, I remember.
Yeah, and but like the kettles in the Walmarts and so forth, we get contracts for certain areas.
Yeah, so the people should contact you regardless, and then you could tell them whether, yes, you're in our area, or no, you have to go to your other local Salvation Army organization to contribute to them so the money stays in the area that it's being collected in.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, I'm understanding their hierarchy because they call themselves the Army, and they run it like an army. Which is, you know, great. For me, it's all about feeding the people that need to be fed and housed. Because right now in Atlantic City, we bring people in, we wash their clothes, we give them showers, we feed them. And the Casino Redevelopment Authority came through with a grant that every charity organization in Atlantic City that feeds people, there's three of us right now, has a dedicated community police officer that's there during service, not to arrest anybody, but to try and help them if they want to get into rehab, because that's mostly what we're dealing with is people that are homeless for a reason.
Made it down on their luck or...
Yeah, and, you know, they'll move to Christianity for certain reasons, but if you're a heroin addict, there's not enough draw. And we understand through our board meetings that the community police officers already got about five people to go to rehab. And Salvation Army provides free drug rehabilitation program. It's in Philadelphia. And there's no insurance, no anything. Salvation Army provides
it. Takes care of it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I could understand. I mean, you know, knowing, unfortunately, a lot of people that are in this drug problem.
Yep.
I can't even say the other word. The drug problem that's out there today, and just not enough help, not enough beds, not enough instructors to show people that there's a better way of keep getting your life back together. You don't need to live, you know, sleep on a sidewalk or eat out of a trash can. There are organizations and people that are willing to help.
Yeah, because that's a big business all in itself.
Yes, yes.
You know, every other billboard is a drug rehab place.
Yeah.
you know, and the Salvation Army will do it with you for free.
Which is, I knew they did the other with the food, and I didn't know about the drug rehab, them carrying the bill for it.
Yeah.
To help you out. Now, is that a 30-day program that they do?
6 months.
6 months?
Yeah.
6 months?
Yep.
Wow.
They go through a full program. Yeah, it's actually quite incredible, the things that they do. You know, besides that, they have the afternoon recreation programs for the kids. We have an after-school program for, they have 30 kids every day, low-income families. Over the whole summer, we have a day camp for low-income kids in Atlantic City, $25 a week. The kids are there all day long. And 90% of the families can't even pay the $25. So talk about lunch shaming.
Yeah, yeah.
There's families out there that can't afford to do anything with their kids every day of the week in the summer. And we take them in. And I'll go right back to our partners at the food bank.
Yeah.
Thank God for them because, you know, whatever we need, we ask. And one thing I've learned in the last 5 years, you don't know until you ask. And as you know,
yes.
I ask everybody.
Yes, yes.
I'm not afraid to ask for anything.
We're always happy to contribute what little we can to the 40 organization.
Yep, and every dollar counts because, you know, we're not shipping it off and going all kinds of places. And me as a chef and now as a food buyer, you want to talk about asking.
Yeah.
Yes,
yeah.
Bill here, he'll tell you all about me.
So what do you got to say, Bill?
I have nothing but good things to say about Mike.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
No, same here. As long as I've known Mike for the last 5-6 years, I think yeah. I met you. Yeah, it's always been,
He broke me in on the first probably half an hour when I first met him. I'm like, I get it now.
He put his arm around you and said, come this way.
Not quite.
Yeah.
He was sitting on the other side of my desk. We need to have a little father of the son talk. Now, I'm just trying to be open and honest with people. You know, if people want to donate and help us, you know, glory be. We appreciate everything. You know, I'm helping a family right now. One of our brethren chefs had a stroke at 43 years old, and he suffered a huge setback. And it just breaks my heart seeing his 3-year-old and 10-year-old son. You go and drop off food, and the son pulls out a box of cereal and goes, "Oh, mommy, is this for me?"
Yeah, to them it's Christmas.
Yeah,
when you're bringing it, when you have, I say nothing, but you have, and you don't have any more. That's.
Yeah, you know.
When you realize.
You know, none of us can stop eating.
Yeah.
So, yeah. You know, what we try and do with Chefs on the Mission is provide a great meal, not the processed foods, the scratch foods. You know, like, we make real green beans and broccoli. We take the carcasses from the turkeys, and we make real gravy for everything that we do. The Salvation Army, fresh chicken, cook it off. Can we accept a lot of stuff? We can, but we don't. But, you know, we don't take a lot of the snack foods that are just junk, salt, and sugar.
Right.
So we give them a nice meal.
You want to teach them a different alternative to eating, to just grab whatever is there. And
a lot of times that's all they have. So if we can get them one or two good meals a day, all the better, you know, because, you know, their health care isn't great either. So, you know, we have to try every day to do what we can to make it happen.
Do you want to give some social media, some address for people, again, to get in touch with you and the great organization of the Salvation Army?
So Salvation Army is at 22 South Texas Avenue in Atlantic City. And if you'd like to donate to us, you have to write on any checks, Salvation Army of Atlantic City, because you get those mailings for the state, and the money goes to the state organizations, which is fine because they run all the beautiful trucks that go to all the disaster scenes and so forth. But if you'd like to support us directly, we're at 22 South Texas Avenue in Atlantic City. Social media, Chef Michael D'Angelo. I spelled my name the traditional fashion. There's no mixed up letters in there, at gmail.com. And I don't want to give out my cell phone number because that's crazy. But, you know, Chefs on a Mission, we will be cooking this year on Monday and Tuesday at the Atlantic City Convention Center. So if you'd, you know, if you can't get me and you want to come down as a chef and volunteer, the Flying Pie guy, John Cole's buddy from up in North Jersey, is going to be down for both days, and he's bringing a camera crew with him, because he's been doing it with us for the last 2 years, and he loves it so much that he wants to really get it pushed out to a further level. You know, because a lot of times when you're a charity, you know, you got to keep it tight. All right?
All right, Michael, thank you very much. I appreciate it. So if everybody would like to give a social media one more time to your organization or the place that you're working, a representative, you want to start off with you, Bill?
Sure. DrSmoothie.com. Email bschmidt, S-C-H-M-I-D-T, at bevolutiongroup.com.
Ida, how about you?
Yes, so everybody's welcome to Cafe Ida. Address is 173234 West Pashyank, Philadelphia, PA.
We have a website or Facebook?
We have Instagram. We have a Facebook under Cafe Ida.
And Michael, how about you, Mike? One more time for the Salvation Army?
Salvation Army at Atlantic City has a Facebook page. It's Salvation Army Atlantic City. And with that, they go and they show all the programs and things that they do in the community on a daily basis.
And I'm Donato Marino with D&L Coffee Service, being a barista, co-owner of Terry's 2, 1541 Chester Pike, Fallcroft, PA. Busy. I'd like to thank everybody that came out to the studio today and the call-ins that we received. Remember, no kids should go without a lunch, no matter what their paying status is. No child should be sitting there hungry and wondering why they can't get a meal. They're kids. They're there to learn, not to worry about when they're going to be fed again. I'd like to close the show with a joke from Jack. Yeah, Jack.
You said you were going to mess up.
I did. Jack the Joke Man Martlin of Howard Stern. Take it away, Jack.
Two guys are sitting in a bar. First guy says, yeah, I was married 3 times. My first wife died from eating poisoned mushrooms. My second wife, she died from eating poisoned mushrooms. And my third wife died of a crushed skull. She got smacked with a hammer. Second guy says, crushed with a hammer? How'd that happen? She wouldn't eat her mushrooms. Hi, this is Small Bites. I'm Jackie Martling. My autobiography, The Joke Man, Bow to Stern, is in presale. Come on, buy a few. JackieTheJokeMan.com. Go buy some.